Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to End Zone This Week. I am your host, Jeremy York, joined once again by Coach Haywood Hill. How are you doing this week, Coach?
I'm great, sir, but so.
I'm doing pretty good. As much as we think the offseason is uneventful, or as much as a lot of people think it's very uneventful, any given week, there are always some interesting things to talk about. You know, a few things will hit this week. Peyton Manning makes a visit to Nick Saban and what that was all about. The Cincinnati Bengals have a new stadium deal, which is actually a lot bigger than just playing home games in Cincinnati. Is Sam Bradford's time up at St. Louis? We'll address the Terrell Pryor trade. Throw in a little bit of an interesting business concept, I guess, that's going to be in the league and what that entitles. And we're going to tell you who could possibly be this year's Eddie Lacy. At least I see it that way. I mean, we could all be wrong. But once again, we are in End Zone, and we will be taking your calls as well. So if you guys do want to call in and talk about any of these things we're talking about, or if there's something in particular just bugging you about your team, especially next Thursday is the draft. We're all gearing up for this. We're getting out those dry erase boards and wearing out the local staples, getting all our supplies. But our call-in number is 347-826-7448. You can catch us at any time, and, you know, if you just bear with us a few moments, we would love to talk to you guys. But first, let's jump into that Peyton Manning situation. And I don't know how much you know about it in particular. Peyton Manning and the Broncos offensive coordinator Adam Gase recently visited Nick Saban at the University of Alabama. Now, when we initially talked about this, a lot of people thought the same way you did and wanted to know what the NCAA violation was. That was not even the issue they were talking about here, which blew my mind as well. When I first heard it, I was like, well, somebody's ineligible now. But what it was is Peyton and Coach Gase came up with that they're such students of the game that they want to learn how to get better. I mean, they did lose the Super Bowl in a kind of embarrassing manner, trying to figure out ways to get better. So they wanted to talk to one of the greatest minds in football at the current moment, Nick Saban, head coach of University of Alabama, who has hoisted quite a few championships in the past few years. So, I mean, he would be somebody to go after.
Well, let's talk about that. I think one of the biggest things that people fail to realize is that football is a universal thing. It's not just limited to the NFL. A lot of these collegiate players end up playing in the NFL. So I think the piece that's missing here is that Coach Saban was once in the National Football League as a head coach. And so it wouldn't be surprising to me that Mr. Peyton Manning and also Coach Dash would go down and just share some of their philosophies or even some of the plays. They might have some similar plays in their playbook.
I'm sure they do.
And would like to see what those wrinkles are, some of the, you know, it's just talking football. Now, again, I was kind of behooved at the fact that the first thing popped in mind was what NCAA infraction was in place. But then when I heard that it was possibly linked to the collective bargain agreement,
yes.
That was the shocker. And I don't think that at any point the Peyton Manning or the
And we're sorry about that. There's been some crazy storms around here, and for some reason it just so happened to hit the building we're in. But as we were saying, the Peyton Manning issue, had this been a violation of the collective bargaining agreement, they could have lost anything from draft picks, been fined. There's all kinds of, you know, in the NCAA, it's just about players that are no longer eligible to be amateurs at that point or certain things like that. But, you know, the overall resolution of this was there was no violation. It was just a bunch of guys talking football. They didn't look at, you know, A.J. McCarron's work ethic or nothing like that. Because as you mentioned, probably 2 to 3 weeks ago, all this was mailed in.
Absolutely, and I think the only thing that could have possibly been questionable was the fact that Mr. Manning, and because Mr. Gase is the offensive coordinator, could have been looked at as possibly doing some consulting work. So that's the only gray area that I can foresee being where it would have possibly infringed on an infraction of the collective bargaining agreement.
Right. Or maybe he was auditioning for a job on Saban's staff. We don't, you know, this is just me speculating, but, you know, maybe he was seeing if Saban wanted to retire anytime soon so he could take the Alabama job. It seems to be, if you can't, it's not necessarily a fallback job, but, right. You know, coaching Alabama, coaching USC, you know, Texas, a lot of these, even UGA, a lot of these positions are considered, you know, pro-level, you know.
Yeah, programs.
Yeah, programs. Right. So, you know, if you can't get one, why not get the other? But, you know, luckily people were, you know, cooler heads were able to prevail here, and they were able to determine they didn't do anything.
Okay.
It doesn't mean anything.
Right.
But switching gears real quick, the Cincinnati Bengals have signed a new stadium deal to continue to play their games in Cincinnati. It's not that they're moving. They're not getting a new stadium. That, you know, it's not Atlanta. It's not L.A. It's none of those kind of things. But the intriguing thing about their deal is that they're now allowed to play an international home game. I believe they're allowed two home games away from the Cincinnati Stadium in the next 5 years or something like that. Because a lot of these teams, you know, Atlanta and Detroit are playing one later this year. There's a couple other games that are playing in London. Well, apparently the reason why the Bengals haven't been able to play in London, Toronto, Australia, wherever these other dates and times could be, was because their deal prevented such things. But, you know, how does, I guess, from the many different backgrounds and things you've done, how does this really help the team?
Well, it's huge. Naturally, for the NFL, having more teams abroad and seeing more teams play is going to also help the brand. So now you're not looking for just two staple teams or four staple teams to kind of be your traveling teams outside the United States to represent the National Football League. They're now starting to encompass other teams that you wouldn't see that are not your traditional Dallas Cowboys or San Francisco 49ers. So now you're bringing in the Bengals and other teams. And once they were able to loosen that stadium deal or re-sign a new one that allowed the ability to do just that, which was allowing them outside of their stadium an area to play, now just, again, broadens the perspective. And then you have Bengal fans around the world. And so, there again, those fans get an opportunity to see their team.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, just from the business standpoint, like you're saying, it used to be years ago the reason why the Cowboys were America's team is because they were almost the world's team. Everybody knew who the Cowboys were in the world, and then the Patriots have stepped up over the years. This is Cincinnati trying to keep up with the Joneses for sure, because if you get passed on certain opportunities like this, you may never recover. It'll take a long time to make that kind of money.
I agree.
But, you know, I think this is going to be a real good thing. No, they haven't said if they're targeting certain years or certain destinations, but, you know, if nothing else, this puts that little bug in Goodell's ear where, okay, the Bengals are now on board with this thing. I can schedule them a game somewhere.
Absolutely. They get a chance to put their name in the international hat.
Yeah. And, you know, quick note real quick, at the 8 o'clock hour on NFL.com and NFL Network, who we're not associated with, I just want to throw that one out there too, they're going to announce the schedules for the upcoming year. So we're going to, even though we already know the opponents, we're going to finally know which order, which can determine everything, just like in college. It depends on when you play people just as much as how you play people.
I do agree. I think once the schedule is launched, it gives the organization an opportunity to look at where they're going, what they're looking at as far as the draft is mm-hmm. concerned. It lets them know immediately where they have to look at their injury reports mm-hmm. and veterans and where they are.
Mm-hmm.
It also gives them opportunity to assess the OTAs and how mm-hmm. where they're going.
Mm-hmm.
And most importantly, I've always broken the game down into quarters. So those first four games in that first quarter will determine a lot as to how you get off the ground and how fast you have to move based on the opponents that you play.
Oh, absolutely. You know, if, you know, we'll take Atlanta, for example, because a lot of our audience is out of Atlanta. If Atlanta was opening up against, you know, a team like the Browns or the Jaguars or possibly even Oakland, a team that's rebuilding and also trying to make up for, you know, a dismal year that they had and trying to really get everything back on track, then your depth chart can look a little different. You can be okay not having maybe two or three guys behind somebody and just having one for now, where if the Falcons had to open up against the Saints, you need to have all guns blazing and ready to fire.
Right, I agree. And so everything is a chess game. when you're talking professional sports. And I'm sure that all the organizations out there, all of the teams in the National Football League are right now going and looking at what they have to do and where they need to be. Again, like I said, not only from the draft perspective, but from where they are on their roster and their free agent signings to get themselves going immediately once their schedule is launched.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, speaking of one of those teams that needs to kind of bounce back, the St. Louis Rams, who hold that number 2 pick and the number 13 pick because of the RG3 deal from a couple years ago, a thing that was brought up because a lot of people think, along with Houston at the number 1 pick, that St. Louis will easily let go of the number 2 pick to move down, maybe grab another couple players. They're not, you know, so far it doesn't seem like they're real sold on who they would want to take. What was brought up the other day, and at first I thought it was just a rumor, but I've seen 4 or 5 different reports from a lot of credible writers and newscasters that kind of hint towards St. Louis could keep the 2 pick or try to stay somewhere in the top 10 and grab a quarterback, kind of saying they're not sold on Bradford being their guy.
Well, one of the things, to whom as much is given, much is expected, and again, he had a huge contract when he came into the league. One of the last big contracts like that to come in as a young quarterback. And now I guess the organization might be looking at have they got bang for the buck.
Mm-hmm.
It would not hurt for them to go after another quarterback. It doesn't mean they have to give up Bradford to do so, but it does mean that they need some insurance.
Exactly.
And they do have a lot of things there with them having 2 picks in the top 26 slot.
Mm-hmm.
Trading out of that second spot would not hurt them at all, still having a 13th pick. They can go down and grab a lot of 2s, or they can take a 13 and grab a lot of 3s.
Mm-hmm.
So the general managers are really working in this draft. Again, we talked earlier in a couple of episodes prior to this about the quality of players and the depth of players in this draft.
Right.
So I don't think people should be too surprised that in the first round you're going to see a lot of moving and shaking and deals made
mm-hmm.
and trades done as a result of that depth. Mm-hmm. Trust me, every organization in the National Football League has done their homework on the guys that they want and why.
Mm-hmm.
So just be prepared for some things to shock the world and shock people.
Absolutely. I think any given day that you ask me, I've predicted anywhere between 5 to 8 different trades in the first round. I think it's going to be exciting to watch, even if you're just a fan of the game. But, you know, going back to, you know, taking a flyer on guys, long gone are the Sam Bradford contracts and long gone are the Matthew Stafford contracts that were so enormous out of the gate. And they did pay off for a little bit, but both of them have had a lot of injuries. They didn't really play off that way. You know, now Seattle seems to have it figured out, and I think the 49ers are in a similar boat. But I think the Rams are also considering that you can take a flyer on a guy even in the first round and not have to, you know, bet the bank on him out of the gate. You can have him back up Bradford. You can have him learn. Because I believe I can't quite remember who their backup is, but he is he's not only a quality backup. It may even be Seneca Wallace or somebody, but it's a veteran of the league that the veteran and the young guy they have at the top can be teaching that next guy to take the reins. But the reason I bring up Seattle is as we'll get into the Terrell Pryor trade, the three quarterbacks they have on contract. Here's the salaries for this year for these guys. You got Tavares Jackson, who is currently the backup on the depth chart. He's going to make $1.25 million, which is not bad for a backup. You know, he started a few games. He's got a little bit of experience. If something happened to Russell Wilson, he can still run it the same way. Terrell Pryor is similar. He makes the second highest on the roster at $705,000. And Russell Wilson, the Super Bowl champion quarterback from last year, is going to make $662,000 because of where he was drafted and the deal he signed. So, to me, the whole reason, as we kind of transition into the prior trade, the whole reason that they make this deal is to put pressure on Jackson to try to be the backup here, because they can save $500,000 or better by cutting Jackson, letting Pryor be the backup, which is, you know, to go back to the Rams for a second, is the same in the same way what they're kind of doing with Bradford. No matter who the backup is, they can kind of take the flyer on the guy, pay him league minimum or slightly higher, under $1 million for this year, to see if he's going to pan out. Bradford kind of doesn't shake out. You can always put the backup in, or you can always let the rookie have a flyer.
Well, one thing I got to say about the head coach with Seattle, Coach Carroll is most definitely not sitting on his laurels with this one. He's making sure that he's pushing every position.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, even though Mr. Wilson and company did a phenomenal job in the Super Bowl, that was last year, and you're only as good as your resume.
Right.
So now he has two quality quarterbacks behind him that can push him and have a lot of similar talents. They all are mobile. They all have good, strong arms. And they all have experience.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the experience varies, but they all have played in an NFL game. So now the question is what's going to happen with these three quarterbacks? We know that Wilson still will probably be the starter, but he has to be looking over his shoulder at these other two quarterbacks saying, hey, if I don't get this chemistry or keep this chemistry or contain this chemistry, what happens to me if something happens?
Right.
Who's that next guy? And two guys behind me can most definitely get the job done or win enough games to keep them in the hunt.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to put that kind of pressure. You know, I feel that there's a lot of places where that pressure's not in place. So you get a guy kind of get comfortable with where he's at. Maybe he starts kind of mailing it in as opposed to pressing hard the whole time. But everything I've ever seen of Russell Wilson suggests that he never quits. This guy is the Energizer Bunny. He is all over the place. He can still make his appearances and still do all of his stuff. But at the same time, he's humbled enough to know, I need to be the first guy in the facility. I need to be the last guy out.
And one thing I got to say about Coach Carroll, all three of these quarterbacks, if you look at where they came into the NFL, they were not big name guys. They were not big name. They were not big picks.
Mm-hmm.
They were not paid a whole lot of money. So now all three of these guys, that's the common denominator. They all were journeymen into the National Football League, had very good college backgrounds, came from big Division I programs, so they know how to play and they all know how to win.
Oh, absolutely. But it is kind of funny. Like I said, they've got this figured out, and they come into a great situation because it only cost a seventh-round conditional pick, I believe, which is a steal for all this here. And the 49ers were in on the trade talks, but for some reason, I don't think Oakland wanted to trade him across the bay. I really think that's what it was, and I don't think a seventh pick was involved. So here they get a chance to pick up another player, another body, and that's definitely what Oakland needs. Adding Matt Schaub pretty much told me Terrell Pryor's not the guy. And I believe he was a supplemental draft pick.
He was.
Because of some issues he had at Ohio State. I do remember him beating my Wolverines a few times. So I've seen him play on many levels, and he can definitely play. And I do think that, you know, I hope nothing happens to Russell Wilson, but even if he has – it might be – If all three of these guys are, you know, of equal stature for the most part in skill level, why not give Russell Wilson a game off if you're on a big roll?
Well, that's it. As a coach, that's a good problem to have. We always have problems and things that we're dealing with, and at any given time that you can have a good problem, that's a great situation to be in, to have those three quarterbacks that have energy, ability to move, and strong arms that can deliver the football.
Yeah, absolutely. Switching gears real quick. The new concept, I guess, of the new concept of how you can support your favorite player, I guess, would be the way to put it. I'm sure we're both fans of San Francisco's tight end, Vernon Davis. You know, pretty good player. They kind of do the Jimmy Graham thing with him as they line him up in various formations, even wide receiver sometimes. But the people who currently represent him, I guess, his agency and some of his advertising people, are going to put up, I believe, 4,200 shares of stock for $10 a piece by the week's end, I believe. You can now buy a share of stock in Vernon Davis. So now you can support your favorite player by owning a piece of their marketability, I guess.
Well, if you remember in the last episode, we spoke on the agents and their roles.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I pointed out was that agents have a very unique job of finding opportunities, but more importantly, keeping their clients viable and productive and in the public's eye. So this marketing concept...
I think it's interesting. I mean,
it's quite interesting.
I mean, you know, my collegiate background is half of it's in marketing as well, and I think it's, I won't say revolutionary, but I see that this is quite interesting as to the concept now and where this can go.
So let me ask you this, because I'm not as well versed on the buying of the share of Mr. Davis. How does the shares actually work? You purchase this share, and how does that work with you now owning that share? How's the investment work?
From what I read, they're not going to be. They're not. It's not like a. It's a public offering, but it's not. You can't pull up the NASDAQ and look up this company and buy a piece of Vernon Davis in that respect. But you go on their website and you register.
Okay.
I guess so that you can trade within their company or within their realm. And as far as I know, it has nothing to do with his contract, which I believe he has 2 years left.
Okay.
It only has to do with his endorsements and his off-the-field things, his things beyond his contract. And I don't know if you buy it for $10 and he signs on with Nike for $4.2 million or something like that, if you get some kind of kickback. I don't know if the price of the $10 is going to go up or down. To me, at least from what I know of the marketing world and the way the stock market works, this is a company trying to get their money up front, knowing that it's going to pay off later. Kind of like a war bond, where a country would issue war bonds to try to raise money real quickly to build the machines and to do the war effort thereafter, knowing that when this is all over, we can easily pay these guys back.
Right. Okay, so with that being said, the concept should work. He is a popular player in the National Football League.
Usually,
so basically, this would be equivalent, from what you're telling me, as having a rookie trading card.
Yeah. To a point. $10 is not all that much.
Right.
And
although he's
world.
Not a rookie, the concept is just dealing with a live individual versus the trading card that you might have picked up 2 years ago, and is it panning out now?
Right. You spent $10 for that pack of cards. You get the Vernon Davis card in it, and in a couple of years, maybe it's worth $10 still. Maybe it's more. Maybe it's less. But yeah, in a way, it's trading cards, imaginary trading cards, I guess.
A stock market in a business concept.
Right.
Okay,
right.
I get it.
You know, and with them offering this out of the gate, at some point, you got to think that anybody could own parts of their favorite player.
Well, I expect it to catch on, to be honest with you. To be able to say, hey, I own shares in this particular player's investment, then it says a lot. And it's war cooler talk.
It gives you, the Green Bay Packers are owned by shareholders.
Absolutely.
Which, a lot of people forget, and I know I've mentioned a few times on here. But they're owned by shareholders, and there's a committee that decides some of the major events. But there's an annual meeting every year where if you want to own a piece of the Packers, you find somebody with one of these stock certificates, or you find your own agent, and you can easily be one of the owners of the Packers. So why not go to these players? The only thing that I really feel sad for these guys, the two guys I'm about to mention, the guys that if they were still in the league, would have benefited the most from this, and I think you could have had such a wide appeal. Vernon Davis may be the good test subject for now, but imagine if this had been done 5 or 6 years ago with Terrell Owens or Chad Johnson.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, this beyond the Ocho Cinco network, beyond the realm of T.O.'s just crazy celebrations, imagine if you could have went back 5 years ago and I told you for $10 you can own a piece of anything Terrell Owens does outside of football.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, at that point, this would have been a larger scope at this point now.
Oh, yeah.
But like you said, you start somewhere with it. It's fun. It's entertaining. It most definitely is a great marketing tool. It gives some additional funds and visibility to the player through his body of work and through his agent and his marketing group. So I'm going to watch that closely to see how that
happens. I
think it's going to be interesting.
I won't lie. I've considered putting maybe $10 or $20, $30 to the side this week out of the paycheck to maybe look into this just to say you did. Because, what if this thing takes off and next week they're worth $30? Then my $30 investment is worth $90 now. So
right.
I can turn around and cash that out, make my quick $60 and be out. Mm. Or, at some point, the thing that I brought up to a lot of people this week that brought this up to me, at some point, him being a 49er, why wouldn't Russell Wilson buy him or buy stock in him? Or why wouldn't Arthur Blank buy a piece or Jerry Jones and go, hey, since I, you know, try to be a majority stockholder even to where they get in his ear and say, when that contract runs out, how about you come to Dallas? How about you come to Carolina? How about you come, you know, what's going to stop that from happening?
Well, again, I think they have most definitely have looked at what the rules, they've had to put some type of, you know, boundaries to what they're going to do with this. But I just think it's a great idea to get an opportunity, especially as a fan, now that you can get very intimate with your personal preferences and players and buy stock in them. And, again, it's a great marketing tool and it's a great business concept. It allows you to see from a small perspective how stock really works. And believe it or not, as a coach, that is one of the things that I use. I use a business module to explain to rookies when they come into the league what your value is. And the first thing I tell them when we first meet or we come together, I say, well, if I had to explain this game to someone who did not understand football, I explain it in the course of business, and I can do this very quickly. I say, you are the president and CEO of a company called yourself.
Mm-hmm.
As assistant coaches and coordinators, our job is to go find and buy stock, your stock. We then bring that back to our head coach and general manager, who are the managers of this brokerage firm, who is headed up by the owner. And so now, while they're in practice, I tell them, how's your stock today?
Yeah.
Because you're trying to sell your stock
right
to the National Football League or whatever league you might be playing in. So that is a great way of looking at what your value is as the CEO of your company called Self. So I really think that this is going to work out.
Absolutely. And in case you guys are interested, because I'm sure a lot of you are, I hope you are, because I'm pretty interested myself. But the name of the group that has interest in him is Fantex Brokerage Services, who back in October agreed to buy a 10% interest in his future earnings for $4 million. For one, if you buy a 10% interest for $4 million, then you're saying that you think his future interests are upwards in the $40 million range. I haven't seen him on a Gatorade commercial. He could have been on one. I haven't seen him wear Nike gear. I haven't seen him on any national commercials. So I'm just curious how they figure $40 million out of his future.
I don't know where they get those numbers from or just part of the tactic.
And I'm basing that off of, Shark Tank is actually a show I enjoy watching a lot.
Right.
And Mark Cuban always is the first one on that show to bring that up. By the way, Mark, if you'd ever want to be on the show, just give us a call. We'd love to talk business with you. But, you know, a lot of people come in and say, I need $10,000 for a 10% stake in my company. He goes, so you're saying your company's worth $100,000? And he'll say if he sees it that way or not. So that's why I just look at this and I'm like, I don't see where they're getting the $40 million in his future unless they know something we don't.
Well, I'm not going to say that he's not going to be worth it in the future. I'm not quite sure what his contracts was looking like and, you know, moving forward where his numbers are at the position. But maybe, you know, with Gonzalez now, other tight ends that, you know, some young guys coming.
It's true.
There's a possibility that could be the case. But I wish him well, and I hope everything pans out. And like I said, I'll most definitely be interested to see how this turns out, because if this does take off, mm-hmm. then how many more players are going to try to jump in, and then what is this going to turn into for this company?
Yeah, absolutely. And instead of jumping on the bandwagon of a Peyton or a Tom Brady, you know, it might be time to jump on a Terrell Pryor or some of these smaller guys. So as they blossom and get those national contracts and national things, you know, you're holding a good piece of their future.
Right.
If you want to call and talk to us about any of these issues or any of the things we're talking about, or, you know, if there's just something bugging you about your team, which is draft is next Thursday, make sure to put that on the itinerary. I know I won't miss it. But you can call us at 347-826-7448. We'll get you the end zone line and get us straight to us. We'd love to hear from you. One of the other things we did want to hit on, I mentioned the possible next Eddie Lacy, the great running back out of, he went to Alabama. Yeah, out of Alabama, who played for Green Bay last year.
Correct.
And he just, when he was healthy, even though he kind of had some knee issues as well, but when he was healthy, he was arguably one of the best runners in the league. The way he can kind of jump through defenses, and he's not afraid to hit people, and he really was a breath of fresh air to a Green Bay running corps that has not necessarily always had the dominant guy. They've usually done kind of a committee thing. But the guy that I see this year as kind of being that guy is Marcus Lattimore, who is currently with the San Francisco 49ers. Had that horrific, I think that's what everybody knows him by, the horrific injury while he was at the University of South Carolina. If you really want to see the gruesome the video online, I don't recommend you do. Just take my word for it. His knee goes places that it shouldn't go. But he says he's ready to shine and he's ready to go, and I believe him because I'm not, you know, a big fan of South Carolina. I do like Steve Spurrier over there, and I do think that he helps groom people the same way Saban does at Alabama to be ready for that next level. But I used to enjoy watching South Carolina games just to watch Marcus Lattimore run. It didn't matter to me if it was 5 carries or if it was 500. The guy could be a game breaker.
One thing about Mr. Lattimore, he is a very good football player. For San Francisco to invest in him like that, knowing that he would be down for a year, not knowing how he was going to come back from the injury and if he was going to be productive, said a lot about what they thought about his talent.
Mm-hmm.
What helps Mr. Lattimore is that he's not had any pressure to get well or get better fast. He has a very experienced running back in front of him, Mr. Gore, who can teach him and has taught him, and he's been able to watch it, and not only watch it from the classroom and the field, but to see it beyond just the regular season and postseason play. So now he knows exactly what it takes to go those extra games.
Yep.
Now he just needs to go to the field with that conditioning, because when players are hurt, we tell them as coaches, because the body can't doesn't mean the mind shouldn't.
Right.
So I always have them at practice, and they're right there with me. They get an opportunity to see what I'm thinking and why I'm thinking, mm-hmm. and this is what we're looking for. So when they step into the mm-hmm. game, they understand that better. And more importantly, when they see it on film, it's quite obvious why it's that way. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen with him this year. I can't wait to see him coming out. I know he's ready to knock off the rust and get back into the pads. And again, that 1-2 punch between Gore and Lattimore is going to be something to deal with in the running game of San Francisco. Trust me, along with the other things that they have,
right.
and Mr. Davis and Kaepernick and the receivers that they have. So they're going to be a force to reckon with this year. And trust me, with them being so close but no cigar at mm-hmm. the end of this, San Francisco is going to really push it this mm-hmm. year to get into the Super Bowl.
Yep, absolutely. And before we do get out of here, I had been teasing on Facebook all day about a big announcement, and we had talked about it a little bit beforehand, but the big announcement that I wanted to share was just in time for the NFL draft. We have a new show debuting next week. It's going to more than likely at this time, we're still working out the small details, but it's going to directly follow this show, End Zone. But it's going to go more in-depth, and it's going to center more around the Atlanta Falcons organization and, you know, Falcon Zone, for lack of a better term, I guess. We'll be Falcon Zone and right after End Zone next week. And, you know, especially Falcons fans, or if you're a fan of anybody in the league, feel free to call in and weigh in on some of the stuff. The Falcons have a lot of amazing things going, not just the new stadium. There's a lot of changes going on in this organization right now, and there's just thing after thing and after thing that just every time I pick up the AJC between Mr. Ledbetter and Jeff Schultz and all these guys that are bringing these things to our attention and telling us these other details, that it's time to start talking about it. It's time for Falcons fans to start rising up and realize last year was a down year, but it allowed you to go get the people you needed to now. This year is going to be great for them.
Yeah, I'm looking for some big things out of Atlanta. If you remember the last episode, I spoke of where I predicted the record would be, and I said at worst case they're 9-7.
Mm-hmm.
I am predicting 10-6, and at the high end, 11-5. They're doing some things over in Atlanta right now, and they're making some noise, and to add to the pressure, the new stadium. So,
yeah.
You know, they have to come out And they have to make a statement this year. I mean, they can't just be the Atlanta Falcons that's playing in the National Football League. They have to be the Atlanta Falcons that's dominating football
right.
teams and beating the teams that they're supposed to beat convincingly and beating some of their rivals
right.
and making some statements. I think you're going to see a team with a lot of attitude this year. They're going to not be the ambassadors and the nice guys. I think you're
right.
going to see some guys running over some people and making a lot of noise. So look out for the Falcons this year.
Oh, absolutely. And I know you're still high on backup quarterback Dominique Davis. I hope we get a better chance to see him this year, at least in the preseason, because he hadn't necessarily had a great track record, but he came into preseason situations that were not exactly his control. You know, it wasn't that Matt Ryan got hurt. It's just he played his 10 plays and he was out and just was thrown right into the middle of a drive. That's really hard to do. That's like if I take you out of your job and put you in another department and go, hey, pick up where he left off.
Well, the one thing I like to say about Mr. Davis is that he's a very good football player. I've always spoke highly of this young man. One of the things I like about Mr. Davis is that he most definitely has a strong arm. He has a great attitude, but the thing I think that Atlanta needs to look at is they have to find places to play him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, as a coach, we prepare players all the time. They are more than mentally and physically prepared to go out and play the game, but the one thing we cannot give them is the game itself.
Right.
You only can get that by actually introducing them into the field of play and letting them play. Mm-hmm. So, please, Atlanta, give him an opportunity to find some places to hand off a ball, throw a hitch. I think the only thing that hurts Mr. Davis is that the fact that he doesn't see enough of the game live. And no matter how much we practice, no matter how fast we run and simulate it, you can't simulate game speed against opponents. So I think they just need to find that one place that he can get into the game, find a little rhythm. It doesn't have to be every game, but
right.
every other game, find something he can do so that way he can stay connected to the game. It's not a big drop-off when he steps in and limited on his plays when Mr. Ryan is in or out, but you got to start looking at your insurance policy because if Matt Ryan goes down, and heaven forbid, you know, it happens in the first game or within the first four games, now you're scrambling to try to get this off the ground.
Right.
And I think if you're looking at what Seattle is doing, they're not going to put themselves in a scrambling
no.
situation. They have three capable quarterbacks
yep.
that they can plug, and they got playbooks ready for those guys, and they're going to punch them in and say, hey, go.
Which, you know, the whole reason I brought this up was that similar thing where it's kind of like driving a car. You can play as many video games and simulations as you want to. You can read as many books about the laws and everything like that. You can even sit inside of a car. But until you actually hit that gas pedal and get out onto the road, you've never experienced what it's like to drive a car. It is definitely a privilege. It is not a right. It's the same thing with the National Football League. A lot of people make practice squads. A lot of people never get to dress out. Those kinds of things. But I do agree that they do need to get his feet wet a little bit. And I just forgot, is it Renfrey? I can't think of the third string. That he got hurt during the preseason, but I think the same thing with him. Because if not, if something did happen to Matt Ryan, even if it's a one-week deal, you're not sure who to use. You're basically throwing darts at the board trying to go who should be in right now. And, you know, as a quick thing, as our time's winding down this week, do you think they should go after a quarterback in the draft at any round?
Atlanta?
Yes.
I think Atlanta has enough on the sideline right now. I think they have to most definitely get it into the game and see it work. I don't think they necessarily need another quarterback. I think they have enough on their roster, just like they have in some other areas. I think they need to look at addressing
right.
some other areas. But quarterback is not one of their issues, in my opinion. I just think take what you have, play and see what it can do. If it does not perform consistently enough, then go out and look at
right.
something in the future.
Right.
But how can you make that move without justifying that
right.
move? And that's what that's where the $64,000 question has to be answered for them. Right now I think that Mr. Ryan is not being pushed personally, and I think there's a time for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Atlanta, again, has missed opportunities. And this is me personally speaking. They missed opportunity to put Mr. Davis in some games. So they've had a lot of postseason
right.
play to get him in over the course of the last 3 years
right.
to play him enough to get him at least visible.
Right.
And someone has to at least account for him. Maybe not every game, but account for him some.
Right. And a few people, kind of our quick hits for this week, I guess. Just we'll do some real quick answers for these because we are down in the last few minutes. And we do appreciate you guys hanging out with us today. As always, you can always call us at 347-826-7448. Like I said, that's the end zone line. You can call us anytime we're on to talk anything. We'll get more in depth with the Falcons, but most of the teams that people ask about are the NFC South. So I'm going to mention the NFC South team. You tell me what position, not necessarily a player, what position their first round should be targeting.
Okay.
All right. We'll start with Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
They need a quarterback.
I would agree there. As somebody who has followed their team closely over the years, I think quarterback is what's going to right their ship. Now, they did sign McCown, but that's a whole other issue, a whole other thing. We'll go to the Carolina Panthers next.
Receivers.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know how you can let your first three wide receivers on the depth chart walk and consider yourself taking a step up. But once again, another show, another thing. We'll go to the Atlanta Falcons.
They need a pass rusher.
Pass rusher as in on the front line or on the second line?
Both. But seriously, they need someone that can command at least a double team on the first so they can loosen up some other players. They need a dominant pass rusher for sure.
Absolutely. And we'll get more in depth, you know, with Falcons Zone next week about that. But to finish up, where should the Saints go?
The Saints are like potluck. Nice. They can actually take anything because they have a lot of depth, because they have a lot of players in place. I think that they can pick any position. It just depends on where their injuries were last year. But I think the Saints can take anything because they just have that type of organization.
Well, if you were the Saints, where would you go?
Right now, going into the draft, I think I most definitely would probably look at me getting a linebacker.
That's exactly what I was thinking because, you know, with the issues they had with the bounty gate and everything like that. But I think that's where they're lacking the most. Their front line gets after the quarterback. They have a pretty good shutdown corners and everything as far as that. I think linebacker is where they're lacking a little bit right now.
That
you know,
sounds like, Mr. York, you've done your homework.
Yeah. Roman Harper is not 25 years old anymore.
Correct.
But that is going to do it for us this week. We appreciate you guys hanging out as always. And you can always hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, even my personal Twitter account. You can hit us all up at any time with any kind of thoughts, questions, anything you can come up with. But for Coach Hill, I am Jeremy, and we'll see you guys next week.